Hello, welcome to this episode of My Fermented Life. Thanks for joining us as we document the journey of an entrepreneur and his family as they pursue their dreams of building a food and beverage brand. Follow along as we discuss events, lessons, and meet some really cool people along the way. Now, this week's episode is brought to you by Madge's Food, making fermented food and beverages tastier and healthier, 1 billion microbes at a time.
And now, your king of kimchi, the Baron of Bloody Mary, and the Marquis of Michelada, Mike Miller.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of My Fermented Life. This is your host, Mike Miller. Well, today's a very exciting episode. I know I don't do this as frequently as you want me to. We're working on that. We finally did bring somebody to rock our marketing, if you haven't noticed, on our social media. So she's actually helping me set these up now. So we definitely have some help. One of these episodes, maybe we'll get her on and she can introduce herself. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us again. Please make sure you follow us on your favorite podcast, whether it be Apple, Anchor, Google, or whatever podcast. It's been a while since we've had a guest. In fact, something I know I've personally missed. I really enjoyed meeting people along the way. And I hope you've enjoyed it as well. But today we have a guest. This may be a little more of a technical guest, a little more of that kind of nerdy guest, which I totally love. And I think you're going to find intriguing. This is something that you're going to want to share with everybody who's really into this space. But I'm personally interested in this topic and passionate about. It's actually part of our story of how we founded the company. Please welcome, today we're going to talk about the brain and gut health kind of relationship. So today, let's welcome our guest today. His name is Tony Lopez. He's a biomedical and psychological researcher.
Yes, I am.
So let's put our hands together and welcome Tony. Well, how you doing, Tony?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on here tonight. I'm really excited about this.
I love it. Love it. So since people know me but don't know you, and I've just got a chance to meet you a little bit, why don't you just kind of give us your quick bio, who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So as Mike has introduced me, my name's Tony. I've been in the research world for a couple, like half a decade or so at this point. So really into some nerdy stuff. My background's in psychology. I got trained in that. I've been doing research psychology for the past 4 years. And recently, although, you know, my focus was psychology, I was always interested in that gut brain health. It was kind of one of those things that you come across in your studies, you're like, wait, what? It is newer on the scene. So definitely something that I've kept an eye on. And lately I've been working in biomedical research. So it's something that is coming up a lot as I'm seeing. So just a little bit about me.
Okay, great. Yeah, so today, we're going to talk about what they call the gut-brain axis. And I think before we kind of get into the link between the gut and the brain, I think we need to kind of maybe go backwards and let's do some like basic 101 understanding of what this whole, what the gut really is. We're not talking about that 10 pounds of beer belly that you've put on over the, or the COVID 20 or 15, whatever it is. But then again, here's a plug. That's why we drink Madge's Micheladas low calorie Bloody Mary mix. Anyway, thanks for the humor.
Anytime.
So why don't we kind of back it so our audience understands, because some of them might not understand what this whole like term microbiome is. Can you explain what is the microbiome?
Yeah, it's not a problem. So it is something that has recently come up. It's probably, I would say, less than 10 years old. You know, it's something that's always obviously been around since we were, you know, born, but something that's really come under, you know, observation and come into light. So going back and, you know, kind of you said the 101, what is it? So we know that our stomachs, you know, if we eat some spicy food, you know, we're probably going to suffer. If we eat some sweet food, we're going to be happy, you know? So what we've been looking at is that relationship that it has, you know, it's said that 70% of the microbes we have actually live within our gut. So you're talking about trillions of microbes just in that gut. So it's under a fair assumption to say that anything that goes on in our body relating health or relating any type of wellness is probably controlled by our gut. So when you think about that, it kind of puts into perspective like, okay, well, if so much stuff is happening because of the gut, why aren't we studying the gut? So that's what the microbiome is. It's kind of, it'd be fair to say, think of you having two brains. You know, you have your big brain, which is like, you know, in your head, you know, makes you come up with those funny jokes, have that, you know, sense of humor, gives you those ideas, that creativity, that curiosity. But then you have a smaller brain in your stomach that kind of relays that information back up and down, kind of, they talk to each other and tell each other like, hey, you ate something, it was great, gave us what we needed, so I'm going to give you the stuff that you need, your big brain needs, so you can do what you need to do. Inversely, if your big brain is like, hey, I have more stuff to do, I need this, you know, they communicate back and forth. So that's exactly what that microbiome is. It's just that, you know, huge biome in your stomach that kind of just tells your body, hey, we're good or we're not good.
Oh, great. I mean, that, I think when you know, we first started MADGES, we kind of started dabbling with this fermented food. Mm-hmm. And I know the first time I ever read about the microbiome, I was like totally blown away. Right? I mean, it literally, I think I went through the microbiomeproject.org or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they have a little online class or education series about what the microbiome, and it was just fascinating. It was, and you know, here it is, something that's been in our gut all these years, and yet they consider it like the next frontier of biomedical research. You know, we just completed mapping the human genome, and now they're setting out to try to understand and map the human microbiota, I think there's another term for it, and the links between, you know, and a lot of the proposals they're thinking about whether cesarean births are different than natural births because they have a different set of bacteria, right? And so could that lead to early childhood development issues? And it blew me away. And I always like, one of my corny jokes out there is always, you know, the human body is composed of 40 trillion microorganisms and 30 trillion human cells. So we're actually more bacteria or bugs than we are human. And that probably explains half of my friends, right?
Yeah.
So it's always kind of, you know, it's just amazing how now that we're starting to study that link. Yeah, it just fascinates me. And it's one of those things being in the food industry that, you know, we're actually doing something about that, right?
Yeah. And just like you said, there's much more, you know, bugs in us than there are us. So I remember when I first took my bio class in grad school, one of the teachers told me that when this topic came up, and she explained that exact same thing that you told me, she posed a question to us. She's like, if that's the case, you know, just food for thought here, you know, not trying to, you know, put out new conspiracy theories or anything, but, you know, are we really in control of our own action, or is it our gut telling us like, hey, I need you to do this because we need this? We are outnumbered, so just a little bit of food for thought.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, too, because we used to always joke about, you know, those, not the hunger, but the sweet tooth.
Yeah.
Right? So we always call like, oh, I got a sweet tooth. And you really see that some people, you know, I know ladies have usually a typical better sweet tooth. But what that can be is the microorganism in your stomach or your gut saying, feed me.
Yeah.
And so that could be a sign of misalignment, mm-hmm, or that they need more energy.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that sweet tooth is your body signaling a couple things, either to feed me or that it's misaligned because you're craving things that they want but may not be in your body's best interest.
Yeah.
So it can be at odds with your human cells.
Yeah, and it's definitely something that we see in the scientific, the nerdy term.
Yeah.
It's something called dysbiosis.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, so it's called dysbiosis. All that really means is that there's an imbalance in your gut and your gut's trying to figure out what's happening. And when that happens, there are cases where, you know, it's kind of going back to original bio, right? You know, that puzzle piece connectors.
Yep.
It'll send out kind of a little signal, and it'll either connect to a spot that says, hey, I have all the nutrients I have, we're good, right? Your brain can operate like normal, and it'll send those messages up to your brain, and your brain will go into this huge amount of chain reactions that'll happen, right? That I'm not going to bore you with. Or inversely, if we don't have what we need, it'll send another signal saying, and again, puzzle piece, it'll connect and say, hey, I don't have the nutrients I need. And then it'll send that signal to your brain. And again, another huge chain of reactions will happen. That's where you're saying we have this disconnect here. And that could be kind of what you're seeing. In extreme cases, that's when you kind of start getting into illnesses and, you know, you start seeing more like your irritable bowel syndromes. You start seeing things along like mental health wellness. But yeah, there is very possible an imbalance.
Yeah, and I think that's great. And I think that's kind of why we got into, you know, this category that we're in, because we want to feed the major part. You know, we're focused on feeding the 40 trillion cells at the same time supporting 30 trillion, right? But I think maybe if we look at it from, whether it's from a medical or a nutritional or for producers, that I think that's what's caused a lot of our issues too. It's because we've been looking at it very, I guess the term would be myopic, through one lens, and we're not really understanding that. I don't explain. I'm sure in the 50s they didn't understand this whole, you know, when the guy who invented Wonder Bread didn't realize that, you know, there's actually more than just the human, that there's this whole set of cells that need to be fed as well. And so, you know, he wasn't concerned about feeding us that white, spongy deliciousness that nearly killed, you know, undernourished people.
Yeah, that's something that always comes under fire in the scientific community. And for your listeners out there who sometimes question the scientific community, we understand. We question ourselves. The science is not perfect. And we're always learning something new. And we're trying our best. It's just sometimes science is slow. And let's be real. Like you said, that one guy, we've been looking through a very, you know, myopic view, one lens type of view, and now we're discovering it's not as simple as that.
Yeah.
And because of that, we're correcting information and trying to learn new things, like Magis Food coming out with all these new things that are helping our guts, you know, so that can really help out. So we're getting there. Promise.
Well, it's awesome to hear, I think, a researcher and scientist say that science is not perfect, right? I think, you know, politics aside, we're not going to go that way. I'm typically very open-minded. But I've always explained to people that if you think science is absolute, then you don't understand science. Science, to me, how I define science is, science is a Polaroid or a snapshot of man's understanding of reality at that moment in time. Right, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
I made that up.
Yeah, right? That's a really good.
But it is it's a Polaroid. It's a snapshot, and you know, because things change, right? I mean, Pluto is the in planet club one time, and after one meeting, it's out. It's a subplanet, right? So things change.
Still heard about that one, but yes.
Yeah. So you know, it's kind of. I like that term for science, that it's just a snapshot of understanding at that moment in time. And it ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
So there is no, there should never be an absolute science. Even I think Einstein's theory should be, they're not finite, right? I mean, laws of gravity and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, who knows? As we get to know more, maybe we'll understand how to bend gravity and defy gravity. And
well, yeah, I mean, as we're
the law still exists.
So. Yeah, the law still exists, but there's other things called like dark energy,
yeah,
which is actually energy that kind of pulls two things away from each other. So it's kind of like you said, anti-gravity. We're still doing a whole bunch, they're still doing a whole bunch of research on that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into that stuff.
Yeah.
It's really complex real quick, and I get lost in there. So
sorry, but I got a little philosophical on the whole science thing. But
no, and that's completely fine. I think that's something that anyone who is listening to this, you kind of take that in with a grain of salt. You know, something I say today, a week, a month, a year, as how fast, you know, this a topic is growing, may not be, you know, its absolute truth, because we might have discovered new information. We're always coming up with new things, and new studies are always coming out. Like you said, they're snapshots. But eventually, all these snapshots will give us at least a picture of what we're looking at.
True. So let's talk about what is this? I mean, so we talked a little bit about this gut-brain axis, kind of the link between the gut and the brain. So let's talk about either why is it important, or what are some issues that can happen, or what are you seeing where some of this like cutting edge research is going on and helping understand why it's important to understand this link?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I've been in the psych scene for a while. So when I first came across this, it was a lot in the mental wellness scene. So what we're finding now, and this is something that's new, is that this gut health actually plays a role in this multifaceted approach that we have towards mental health. You know, mental health is not a one point, like one thing solves all. You know, it's a very complex, it's multifaceted. You know, something as simple as depression, it's not as simple as we think. You know, there's social factors, there's genes, there's our medication, you know, there's social environment things going on. So things that are multifaceted like that need a multifaceted approach. Yes, we can throw counseling at it, we can throw medication at it, we can throw, you know, social media posts at it. But the more approaches we have to it, the greater likelihood of success that we have. So one of these things that, you know, that comes into play is we're finding that people who, because we know that depression and anxiety and suicidality are very serious topics. And it's something that we're coming across a lot more now. So we're kind of figuring out, like, what's happened? You know, what's going on? So as we're learning more about it, you know, the trend has kind of, you know, moved to let's study what's going on in the gut, see if that helps. And we're finding that, yeah, actually, we're finding some pretty good information from that. One being our diets. Our diets aren't necessarily the American diet, and I'm guilty of it. I'm sure almost everyone is guilty of it. You know, we're busy. We stay busy. We don't always have the most time to, you know, cook for ourselves. We just buy something out to eat. So we're kind of seeing that the American diet has transitioned from this, you know, kind of holistic, you know, nutritious diet to kind of very refined sugars, high carbohydrates. That's kind of messing with our guts, because that's not necessarily what they need. So because of that, we're seeing that medication may not necessarily, like, if we were to give medication for depression or anxiety, it might have like this kind of no effect because the guts were the gut's not in a good enough place to even accept that medication. So that was something interesting that I came across when I was doing the research, that yes, we can be, you know, we can well document, we can be well cataloged, this is depression, this is the medication that works best, but we still see people not, you know, responding to this, and they're still just falling deeper and deeper into the hole. So it kind of poses a question, and we had to stop, like, what's going on? You know, like, this is supposed to be helping, but why isn't it? So once we got into that, we started seeing that, you know, we had to look at things like folic acid, like vitamin B9. We started having low folic acid, or folate level, sorry, is actually a common trend that we see in people who have depression. Diabetes, people who are diabetic, you know, they have two times as likely to have depression than people who aren't diabetic. So we're starting to see, like, okay, so something's going on with the gut, you know, in our diets that's affecting something in our brains. So it's something that we actually have to look at. And there have been studies out there that look at, you know, when you supplement, you know, an antidepressant with, you know, vitamin B9, I want to say, with folic acids, you actually start seeing a resurgence of, like, lower depressive symptoms and a better outcomes. So that's the reason we're looking at all this now, because it's like, this is a multifaceted symptom. We need to take a multifaceted approach.
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
sorry if I bored.
No, absolutely. No, you're fascinated. I mean, that's just depression. I mean, are they starting to link other issues to the gut health, this gut brain axis? I mean, what else are they discovering along this connection besides depression? I mean, I've heard the depression,
uh-huh,
and that was a pretty big, you know, revelation.
Yeah.
Are they starting, is, you know, what's coming out there in the research? What other areas are we linking, whether it be mental health, or I don't know if you know too much about, like, learning disabilities,
mm-hmm,
if there's a link. I have you done any research into that, or?
So in terms of, like, so depression, anxiety is one thing. I know one thing, like schizophrenics. We're still doing early research with that, so I can't, you know, don't hold me to a T here.
Okay.
But what we found is that, you know, people who are schizophrenic, whenever they have high sugar intakes, we actually see a worse in their mental state. So it's kind of one of those things where you're like, okay, well, you know, what are we really, you know, we might be giving them the medication, the treatment, and, you know, the one-on-one that we're doing, but if we're not paying attention to their diets, it may actually be kind of hurting them as well. Because, I mean, if you think about it, at the end of the day, someone who has, a mental illness and is in a facility, yes, they don't exactly have, like, a, you know, restriction on any type of diet. So they might just be getting fed whatever they want. And if you're talking about someone who's like 15, 16, 17, at that age, I was not eating the best foods. So you kind of have
Coca-Cola's
to...
Coca-Cola's and Snickers, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I woke up, drank a Coke, you know, right when I was going to school, probably had a Sprite, Gatorade along the way, you know. By the end of the day, I probably consumed at least like 5, 6, 7 cans of Coke. Probably not the best, but again, you know, we didn't know any better at that time. So
sure.
It's 10 years ago. So it's kind of one of those things where you start having to realize, like, okay, if these people are in facilities, we have an obligation to do everything we can, including, you know, trying to work their diet to the best of their, you know, what will help them out best for the best results.
Yeah, I mean, that, and I don't know, maybe I interrupted you, but I think what, just a little backstory too, you know, Madge is my co-founder, Jody, you know, she's a special education teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she started this thing, even our own household, probably, I don't want to give her age away, but maybe 18 years ago, something like that, where she worked with all these special needs kids. And two of our children have you know, pretty mild cases of some pretty common learning challenges. Mm-hmm. I like to call them disabilities, but but because of that, you know, there's a couple of things in food that ADHD. Mm-hmm. Okay, ADHD children are typically very hypersensitive to sugars and red dyes, mm-hmm. or no, not sugars, high fructose corn syrup.
Okay,
and red dyes. Now, I don't know if this is actual study or if these have been science looking mm-hmm. into it, but her research—that's kind of what she was researching at the time when she was working on her, I believe, her master's. And so the whole link between nutrition and learning development, mm-hmm. and this is kind of, I guess. Who knew that it was going to lead to us making food? But, you know, that's
the road we take, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been intriguing that there is this link mm-hmm. between what we eat and our brain, right? And I don't know, are you seeing anything out there with other like learning disabilities like autism? I mean, I've actually had some interactions with customers with autism and food. Mm-hmm. Especially fermented foods. Mm-hmm. Are you guys seeing any things like that? You're discovering these learning connections between the gut as well, or?
Yeah, so there's actually some pretty interesting stuff. When I first came across this again when I was in grad school, my professor shared an interesting story. That this wasn't her area of focus, but she was very much in the bio world, more so than I am, right? But she shared an interesting story that when this first came out, there was a researcher up north who... she believed there was that connection, you know, all the stuff she was reading. However, you know, one thing that is kind of tough with academic research, you have an IRB to kind of report to. The IRB, I'm not going to say is bad, but they are in charge of making sure that you're staying everything above board. It's ethical. You're not hurting anyone. Mm-hmm. So with this new research coming out, she wanted to try and, you know, see if there was any effects on you know, children with ASD, you know, who are on the spectrum. If there's any effects going on. However, IRB wouldn't let it go just because at that time there wasn't enough body of evidence. There wasn't enough literature to support that. You know, it would be kind of cruel to ask a parent to let their child be in the study with the promise of maybe having an effect on or improving cognitive behavior, you know? So just kind of how your co-founder was, she had a kid who was on the spectrum. So like any scientist normally does, they try things on their kid and see if there was anything there. And so she kind of experimented with a lot of different vitamins, a lot of different foods, a lot of fermented things. And she started seeing that there was a change. There was, I'm not going to say they were completely cured, right? Because there's no, again, ASD is something that's really complicated. We're not going to find a cure from one day to the next. But she did see improvements in the abilities of her child. So with that new information, she was able to launch a study where it was more so high-functioning ASD that saw the most benefits from it, you know, but she started noticing that there was incremental improvements in people who had autism. So at the time right now, it escapes me what exactly it was, because I'm not sure if you're too familiar with how the microbiome and how whenever we... So what happens in ASD is with the leading theory that's in microbiome right now is that there's that dysbiosis. There's that word again, just means an imbalance in the gut, right? But it's so much of an imbalance that it actually kind of shoots those signals up to the brain and messes with the brain so much that, you know, you start getting into this ASD spectrum from Asperger's, Parkinson's, stuff like that, right? But again, it's such, you send one signal and it can launch millions of different connections in the brains. So it is kind of hard to kind of figure out, okay, with one signal, we get one, you know, a million of these different connections happening. What happens when your whole biome lights up and shoots it up? Mm. So that's kind of what we're trying to do right now. But it, again, this is something that just came, that has been new to the next past 5-10 years. So we're still trying to work on that. Science is a little slow, but we'll get there and hopefully find that connection. But yes, we are seeing a definite connection that the gut has that, you know, effect on the brain. And if it's so, you know, imbalanced, we can see people who are, you know, have those social impairments, those learning impairments that they kind of go on the spectrum. Now, little bit of fun fact, not sure if too many of your listeners know this, but whenever there's something like that in the microbiome and you kind of want to test, you know, see like, hell, what happens if we, you know, introduce healthy microbiota, right? Well, the way you introduce that is through a thing called fecal transplant.
Oh yes, please talk about this. This is actually really intriguing. It really is.
Yeah. When I first came across it, because it was a topic, I saw it and I was like, what? You know, because you don't really think about it too much. You know, you hear fecal transplant, you're just like, what is this? But essentially, that's kind of how you introduce healthy gut microbiota. You know, you take someone who has a balance going on and has that, you know, healthy microbiota, which is like, it could be your probiotic, which is like your lactobacillus or your bifidobacterium. I probably butchered that last one because...
Yeah, bifidus. Yeah, I know. I can't pronounce half of them.
Yeah. I know. It gets complicated real quick. But you take, you know, someone who has, you know, that healthy microbiota living in it, and you kind of just transplant in, get fecal matter, because obviously, you know, that is where what our gut produces, and kind of transplant that into someone who doesn't have that healthy microbiota, kind of to give them that little bit of extra help. Like, hey, we noticed that you don't have, you know, X, Y, and Z. We're here to give you that X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Now, that's not the only way you can get a healthy gut. I mean, that's just the quickest way, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of establish a healthy gut. I mean, you can
these are extreme.
Change your diet.
Yes.
Right? I mean, there's definitely some short-term. You change your diets. You can work, you know, more probiotics naturally through your system.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever weigh in on pills?
So, there's definitely, from what I've read and kind of, I don't do all the research myself because that would be incredible and I would be paid so much. But so a lot of researchers that you meet out there, you know, take a lot of time to just sit there and read articles that may seem boring, but, you know, it's that one or two lines that you pull out and you're like, huh, and just connects all the dots. So pills wise, there has been a lot of work and a lot of benefits out of like omega-3. There have been a lot of, you know, benefits out of probiotic, prebiotic, postbiotics. There's zinc as well. We found that zinc has helped with depression in some sorts. Now, all of these things are great. And
thanks for tuning in to part one on the podcast about gut-brain axis. And what a way to end on fecal transplants. You know, we should get a sponsor for that. Just kidding. Well, I hope you're as fascinated by this topic as I am. It really gives a better understanding of that gut instinct, or trust your gut, phrases that we like to use. I also think this is a great topic to discuss during this pandemic as well. This COVID 2020 has been a challenge for not only our physical health, but our mental health as well. Now, recently, I came across this interesting article. I think it was from a website called psycom.net, and it was written by a Rebecca Dolgen. Excuse me if I butcher her name. But I think this goes hand in hand with a little bit of what we've been talking about in this gut brain. I'm going to read this. Quote, "We've already seen a steady rise in deaths by suicide over the past two decades, and a new report by the Well-Being Trust released last month found that 75,000 additional people could die from what they call death of despair, which includes suicide in substance use because of COVID-19. So, you know, I read the article and they go on to talk about the challenges that we're facing, that social distancing and isolation and loneliness are bad for our health. Well, yeah, I think we've known that all for a while. Plus, we're adding on the addition of economic stress and, my favorite, the constant and pervasive collective anxiety. Thank you, Facebook. So, yeah, I mean, we're definitely going through some pretty big challenges when it comes to our mental health. And it's kind of good to understand that this connection, how important it is to maintain our health. You know, this is not really about me preaching here, even though it's kind of what's going through my head, right? I guess that's part of this journey. Is I've always been amazed that a lot of us got in this food business to change the fundamental business because we didn't like the way it was becoming. You know, these big corporations and they were, you know, cramming cheap food down our voice or our throats, and, you know, full of chemicals. And so a lot of us came in here to make better food that was better for you. And it's kind of funny how whether it's good or bad, you know, a lot of these, the effect has been kind of the opposite, right? When this first pandemic happened, right? Everybody goes to just like this panic mode, and it's like, you know, hamburger helper and macaroni and Kraft cheese, you know, flew off the shelves. But meanwhile, all the healthier products, not at the same rate, right? So people went to the survival mode. And it's kind of funny. It's like you see a lot of local restaurants and poor bars, man. You know, they're struggling right now. Some of them are doing better than others, but some of them are just like trying to get by. And yet, then you go drive by a McDonald's or a Whataburger, my gosh, and it's like freaking lines all the time. And it just makes you kind of think, you know, what are we doing? We're like backsliding when things get bad, right? We don't care about our health anymore. But here we are saying that this whole mental health is also a strain, not only on us mentally, but physically. So, you know, we are seeing a full frontal assault on our mental strength right now. And I know for me personally, you know, running a small food business during these times has been challenging. I'm not going to lie to you. It has definitely been tough. You know, we were so excited because just when we were launching a new product to retailers, this shutdown hits and absolutely disrupted our plans and our ability to market and promote as we had hoped. Now, personally, I became very frustrated with this, and it really challenged me, you know, kind of almost like in a denial, like I was denying this COVID existed, that, you know, if I don't speak about it, don't say about it, just ignore it and just keep working really hard, that we can just outwork it, out hustle it, which worked for a while. But at the same time, I also had to be elated too. You know, timing worked out perfect. Had we had launched a week later, our order would have been canceled, and we might not even made it into stores until 2021. Now, maybe that could be said that was a good thing, right? Because 2020 has been somewhat of a challenge to be launching new products into stores. So, I don't know. Time will tell if that was the right thing to do, or maybe it would have been better to be canceled and just humble ourselves and eat crow and struggle around for another year. But I'm not going to second guess. So, you know, timing, I strongly believe that timing always works out like it's supposed to. And, you know, initially when this all hit, not only was I trying to outwork it, but luckily Amazon, we had seen like a 500% increase on Amazon. And, you know, that kept us really busy. So we didn't really notice an initial change. It hasn't really been until summer months hit that we started to see a slowdown. I think some people started transitioning back into, you know, their local companies, maybe around the country as places started to maybe lessen restrictions a little bit. We started seeing kind of a reduction from Amazon, which is great. So we stayed positive, but we definitely still have to fight this collective anxiety and what I like to call these mask and stay-at-home Karens on social media. Now, look, we get it, okay? But personally, I'm not even sure if the experts really have all the answers. I know they're using their best judgment. Since this is kind of an unprecedented event in modern times with modern science, right? So it's not like this happens every year. So again, I go back to what we're talking in this thing is science is not absolute. It's just a lot of times it's the best understanding at that time. So, you know, I don't always believe in things absolutely. So anyway, but I'm not here to actually discuss, you know, kind of my, maybe I don't want to call it political views, but just kind of maybe some of my life views, I believe. But anyway, it has affected our business. You know, we also luckily at the same time, we launched into Whole Foods, and that's done very well for us. And, you know, we are really excited about the future. I just think this year ended up being kind of a hold on, take a deep breath and get ready for what's next year, you know. But I think also we've seen a change in people too. And I think it's been a test to the human condition, right? I think I've seen the best in some people. I've seen people really stretch and challenge themselves and change. And the people that really blown me away was the ones that seen their businesses almost on the collapse of just destruction. And instead of making it about them and worrying about, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? They made it about their community. They made it about service. They made it about those that couldn't, that needed the help, that nobody was there to help them. And to this, that just blows me away. And maybe if that guy's listening here, or those people listening here, one of these days, I'd love for you to come on this podcast and talk to you, because it just, I'll be honest, I don't know if that's like my first instinct. You know, it's, to me, it's that fight or flight. And when bad happens, yeah, I'm going to go into either defensive mode or an offense. I'm going to fight. And for those that, you know, it amazes me that they just go straight to service and caring. And it's not the way I was made, but I'm always impressed with those that go to that service first type attitude. And it just amazes me. Anyway, so, but I also, I think we've seen the worst in some people, or maybe worse as being a little overdramatic, right? I do think this is a temporary condition we're going through. And I think I've seen it also take hostage of people, even though it's just for the moment. And I'm hoping that once it settles, that that hostage situation of fear is lessened, and we can be reunited again. And, you know, I guess we all go through different experiences, and life has a way of teaching us lessons, and, you know, we change, right? It's just kind of sad that we've also, you know, I've seen people go the other way, and I don't like that. But again, maybe they're saying I'm the weirdo, and maybe I'm the one that's, you know, doing the bad. Who knows? But I'm not here to judge. Well, you know, as the summer went on, I won't lie to you, I still feel like there's those crazy doubts trying to knock on my head and tell me, nope, you've run your course. Now, luckily, I've been around the block before, not too many times, and I've heard those voices before, and luckily, I've learned how to stop listening to them. Doesn't mean that they don't try. You know, I just kind of go back to, I chose this road as an entrepreneur because I liked the challenge of growing something from an idea to a product or service, and then to the end result of making a change in a customer's life. There's something very fulfilling about that. I think it's also a path that is with a lot of resistance and challenge and difficult and a high failure rate. And I tend to like that a lot, because very few do. And the ones that do, I don't know, it's just kind of that challenge I like. But it comes with the territory, I guess. It's par for the course. You know, I guess my biggest weapon against all this is hope. Yes, I have hope that things will return to a level of normal and the right actions will happen that are best for Magis. So at least now we have the time to sharpen our tools and get prepared. So I guess my plans for world domination have been put on the back burner, well, or at least until 2021. So that's it for today. We're going to keep it kind of simple and short. Stay tuned in here for the comeback for episode 2 of my Gut Brain Axis, and we'll conclude with that. So thanks again for tuning in to My Fermented Life in this podcast, and follow me along my very unperfect journey. Continue to subscribe and listen wherever you listen to your podcast. We also always enjoy hearing from our listeners and customers, so don't be afraid to comment, ask questions at our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. The best way to get a hold of us usually is at Madge's Food, because it's not only me answering it, we have my awesome social alchemist Ilse out there, so it will definitely get to me. So you can always also send us a direct message too. Well, I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and until next time, enjoy.